Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 16th, 2006. As you know, we're live every week at this time. That is 3 to 4 in the afternoon Eastern Time out of the United States. And we are welcoming both those of you who are participating live by telephone hookup, those of you on the Internet, and we will welcome your emails. And we have a very urgent topic today, nothing less than rebuilding our nation, and in particular, reconstructing and reviving the Democratic Party in order to do that. Now, I will welcome our guests that we have now. Some will come and go. That's how many we have this hour. And you'll see how they bear on the topic at hand, which is really the fight for the future of the Democratic Party. We've had momentous developments in the state of Texas. And so from Houston today, we welcome Natalie Lofgren. Are you there?
Hello.
Great. Who's been on the campaign trail, and she'll be describing what the latest is. And from Los Angeles, California, who was in Las Vegas all week for the United Auto Workers annual convention, in particular on the issue of forcing the issue that we need federal emergency intervention to save the auto sector, machine tool capacity, and even the industrial base of our nation. Frankie Medina, are you there? Welcome.
Yes, hello, thank you.
And then here in the studio with me, we have Paul Marino of the LaRouche Youth Movement, as the other two we just introduced are, from the newly established LaRouche Youth Movement War Room for this whole effort. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And later in the show, I'm going to say it now and maybe once or twice later, but in the second half hour, we'll be welcoming a figure known to some of you, Tony Chaitkin, on some particular history bearing on who the dirty operators were that would act to subvert the Democratic Party over the last 40 years. But that's for later. What we want to get to right now, we'll start with Paul Marino in the studio, is the firsthand view of what's up in Washington, D.C. relative to the kind of emergency action that we need to force somebody and some grouping and some wing of the elected officials of our nation to take here. Congress is in session because it couldn't be clearer, those of you who've been following this for some time, how the financial monetary side of things in the United States and internationally is disintegrating by the hour. We've never seen over the last 10 days such swings in kind of money sloshing around the world and ups and downs, particularly downs on the world stock markets. Currencies of many nations are dropping. That's just one kind of monetary illustration of things. And there are other aspects of economic disintegration in people's lives. But, in fact, we still have on the chopping block some 60 to 70 auto sector plants, along with non-auto sector industrial plants, that are literally month by month being shut down. It's the existence of our nation. So Paul can tell you what the LaRouche Youth Movement is coordinating here right now.
Well, yes, we are in the middle of conducting our cognitive sieging on Washington. And from the command room here, we've delivered the message last week. The legislation has gone into the Congress. We've delivered the juggernaut. Many in Congress now know the army behind us waiting in the wings. These are the state reps, state senators, UAW leaders who've signed on. And now we are conducting, as you would, a huge piece where we're keeping an eye on how things are going at the state level here in Washington, you know, how things are going out in the middle of the country, and then crossfiring that all over our friends in Washington.
Let me interpose here for 1 minute, Paul. Mm-hmm. You've reminded me of something. Those of you who follow this website and the LaRouche Show know that it was June 9th that Mr. LaRouche in Washington, D.C. gave an international webcast, and that's what you would have heard if you tuned into the LaRouche Show last week. You would have been linked over to that availability to just have it replayed. But, Paul, you might describe what you're referring to is that there was almost a fly-in, correct, of dozens of auto workers and state legislators.
Yes, there are a number of union leaders, labor leaders, who are endorsing the legislation because they know they have no chance. You cannot make a deal with Felix Rohatyn and his group of friends. There's no deal. There's no game to be had. So it's either you fight for your survival or you go down with the ship. So this legislative push is their last chance to save the industrial economy of the United States. Now, at the same time, it's very fortuitous. All of the states, the state Democratic Party operations are having their state conventions. So we have the opportunity to meet these people as they're getting together to deliberate how they want to organize the party for November. And, you know, our other organizers on the phone have more of the details of that story. But just to close with what we're working on here now in the war room and in D.C. in particular, is we're looking to restart what we began in the winter around the animation's work with the youth movement. We're looking now to improve our pedagogical ability to communicate LaRouche's ideas in economics through the EIR and through our work in general. And there's a couple of topics which are close to being completed, particularly the topic of water, water transport, water desalinization, and also our aquifers. Where are they? How much do we have left? Another series of animations on transportation among cities. Other animations are being developed now on resources. What are the mineral resources of the world and of our nation particularly? And two other series is also being developed on railroads and nuclear power systems. As you know, the challenge is great. We have a lot of Democratic Party activists and citizens to mobilize. And on any number of these topics, there's not a lot of clear thinking, as we saw in the last 2 weeks around this ethanol silliness. So that's what we got going on here in D.C.
So you're
right
talking
now
about the principles of economics to people who might not have thought about it, depending on their age, for the last 30 years.
That's right. That's right.
And, Paul, while you're still here, before we go out to hear about California, Las Vegas, and so the United Auto Workers Convention that was taking place likewise in the last 10 days, you were here in Washington when some of the state legislators or unionists from all kinds of unions came in, and what? They had meeting about 35 or more meetings. In other words, and then they had a caucus themselves to meet about where to go next.
Right. We had a series of meetings with youth members, youth organizers with the youth movement, meeting with the VIPs, either state reps, state senators, or UAW officials with the particular congressman or senator on pushing LaRouche's legislation now, introducing it and also supporting it. And you find that a lot of them are very scared to take this thing on. So in a number of these meetings, you know, our friends in the labor, our friends in the state governments would, they know these guys in the federal government very well. They've known them, you know, from years ago. So after the, you know, how you doing, you know, slap in the back kind of thing is over, the state rep or state senator would look over to the youth members and say, oh, okay, guys, we're here, you know, we're really here to talk about economics. And why don't you guys explain, please? Just because the problems that you find in the boomer generation, they were deferring to us to clearly convey what has to be done and where to go from here.
Now, what would you say in light of the dynamics involved of the impact of the LaRouche Political Action Committee having bought ads on the in the two publications that go to Congress, mm-hmm. one is Roll Call, one is The Hill last week, with signatures from the home states for emergency economic intervention?
It was a lot of fun. In our work, in my particular group in Congress, there were numerous times where you'd storm into the office and bring this up to their attention, and they would, the secretary or the aide or maybe even the senator, would have a chance to look through the ads. Oh, I know him. Oh, he's promised me X number of votes. Oh, he's going to contribute to my campaign. Oh, okay. And then the uncomfortable silence would you know, take over. The representative or senator would have to think now, okay, what am I going to do? So I think that's where we are with the Democratic Party. There's a lot of people reflecting upon what has to be done to save the nation. And many are reconsidering what they thought they knew. And they're realizing they are not prepared to fight. And they find in the LaRouche Youth Movement and Mr. LaRouche himself a great ally to win back the nation.
Right. Well, let's Natalie from Houston, Texas, or Frankie may have questions for you or vice versa. But Frankie, do you want to at this point describe the your particular UAW effort among the auto workers?
Yeah, it was a deployment. We had two youth go into Las Vegas. There was the national conference for the United Auto Workers. I don't think the LaRouche movement's ever actually organized at one of these places. I know there was a lot of confrontation with the United Auto Workers in the 70s and various different labor unions. We were there with Mark Swayze, who's a leader of the United Auto Workers in Columbus, Ohio. And as we saw this past week, he's widely recognized as a leader. As a lot of people would come up, say hi, and Mark would begin to organize them. And we were also there with Bob Bowen, which is one of he heads up some of the offices in the Midwest, the Detroit office and the Chicago operation, I guess. What I saw there was an unwillingness to really look at the challenging globalization. Like everybody would in discussions would describe, well, yeah, industry is going overseas. Yeah, we need to do something about this. We're losing health care. We're losing workers' benefits that we fought for the past 70 years since the beginning of the United Auto Workers. But yet, the elephant in the room was like, well, hey, why don't we just question globalization? Well, like, it doesn't function. Look what it's doing to our industry. And you had this block reinforced. There was a speech given via internet by Barack Obama, who, he's a good guy, could be organized, but yet at this point, he's unwilling to blatantly just challenge globalization. The mentality is, well, we have to work and reorient ourselves around it. We have to, give a little here, give a little there, which is really insane. And so what we were doing is we were getting signatures for what LaRouche has written down in this latest pamphlet on the U.S. Economic Recovery Act. And it really was, if you think about it, it's embarrassing the leadership of the United Auto Workers, who should be behind this already. LaRouche is saying we can go back, retool the automotive industry because we're not making money, or these corporations are not making money with the vehicles which they're producing, but they could turn around and massively produce maglev trains, nuclear power systems that we can use to desalinate water in the Gulf Coast and the West Coast, so we can green the deserts of northern Mexico and the southwestern United States. And the workers, the labor unionists, were very sharp on saying, this would work. We know how to do this, And they're really the only part of the population that I've seen that has a sense of we created the United States, we produced it. Whereas there's a growing number of regions in the United States that don't have even that discussion that, well, we can actually create cities, we can create automobiles and things of that nature. We have an increasing amount of people that just think and orient themselves as consumers, in the service economy. So I think we got about 15 signatures for the legislation. We got the legislation into the hands of Schumacher, which was one of the vice presidents that just retired. And one other thing was that we were passing out the Felix Roatan white paper, and there was a lot of people that really don't have a sense of how the inner workings of the Democratic Party or the labor unions in relationship to Delphi and General Motors work. They're just people that want to just go out and work and go home, raise a family, and live the blue collar life. And so the people that we were able to go through the history behind, well, where did Lazard first come out of? I think Chaykin's going to be going through some of this, who supported the Nazis, who Felix Roatan is, and how is he taking he's cut the balls off the Democratic Party, for the past 15, 20 years. People were really receptive of this. We'd open it up to the second page of the white paper that talks about outsourcing Delphi, the crime of Felix Roatan. And throughout the couple of days, like the second day, we had people coming back to us like, well, who is this LaRouche? We've heard a lot about him. Because there were some people that wouldn't take the literature, but more often than not, you had a lot of curious people coming up to discuss what was this all about. But there was about 2,500 people there, and we got about 1,000 pieces of literature out. And that we got cross-penetration from people we've already met. Yesterday on the phone, Aaron Halevi was on, and he was talking to a contact who happened to be at the convention, and she saw our literature there. And so she's coming into the meeting tonight. But we are expanding our intervention within the United Auto Workers into Texas, into Louisiana, Mississippi, and from the contacts which we generated there at the conference.
Right, and the others may have questions for you. There's time over the next few minutes, but one thing to draw out from some of the listeners, you're saying that however much people at the convention who are workers, many of them very skilled workers in the top echelon of skills of the country, might not want to face globalization and look it in the eye, they still would know that you could retool. That is, you could be making these things. They had ideas. They probably were thrilled to run into someone who wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, correct. It's physically possible. They recognize, yeah, we can do anything. I mean, that's their attitude. We can do whatever we want. We have the ability to do so. It's just that there's this conception that, well, globalization is just a natural part of the human evolution. This is just how it's going to be. You can't contest it. We can never go back, you know. And when you begin to tell them, it's like, no, we have to stand strong. Like, LaRouche is the only person in the United States that has built an entire movement, not only saying that we can end globalization, but demonstrating how and what type of programs we can put through, you know, the new Bretton Woods, which would be focused on this machine tool capability of the United States being reactivated, you know, transformed so we can produce the types of systems that, you know, should have been done in the 70s and the 80s, you know. At the beginning of the post-industrial period, you know, we could have stopped the post-industrial drift and, you know, redid what Franklin Roosevelt did in the 1930s and 40s, which people were very hip to that. Walter Reuther, I guess, he's a name of one of the really highly respected UAW presidents in the past, and there were people saying, you know, we got to go back to unions acting like unions and not acting like, you know, like pansies, just giving up what you know, we shouldn't be giving up. And so there are definitely people that want to fight, and that's something.
Well, that maybe takes us over to Houston, Texas. Speaking of regrouping all the people to fight again, Natalie, do you want to then give the overview of what you've been involved in right there in the center of things in the Texas Democratic Party?
Yeah, we were running a candidate from the LaRouche Youth Movement for the Texas Democratic Party state chair, and we just had the state convention for the Democratic Party in Fort Worth this past weekend. And so the campaigning up to the convention was just really amazing, because Keisha Rogers was the candidate's name.
And by the way, there's an interview with her. I encourage everyone to get the EIR online, or to get the magazine, but it's coming out in this upcoming week with Keisha Rogers. Thanks.
So we had Keisha traveling around the state, accompanied by different groupings of other youth movement members from the Houston area. And so she would go to Senate district meetings, to labor conferences, to union locals, meet up with state legislatures, go to U.S. congressional offices, not just to say, hey, I'm running for the Democratic Party chair, but to say, look at the opportunity we have right now, and we need you guys to see how urgent this is. We need everyone on board with this emergency legislation, because this can be used to completely retool the economy. And so her campaign was focused around an immediate action. That it wasn't that, yeah, she was saying generally we need to reorient the Democratic Party around the Franklin Roosevelt tradition, return to the principles that represent his legacy, that represent the lower 80% of the population, represent the general welfare. Those were the principles generally that she was campaigning around. But then specifically it was, look, we need you on board with this legislation right now. The country's disintegrating, and we have the opportunity to completely reverse that trend and come out with something that could be an amazing science driver program that could boost the entire nation into the future. So then we had this triangulation. We were in contact with the war room there in Washington, D.C., so we were getting this crossfire between the offices, because we would meet up with some of the district offices for U.S. Congress and discuss the legislation with them, and then we would get this crossfire between the reports that we were getting in D.C. as well as other locals around the country. So it was very effective. We really... Then when we got up to the convention, you could see there was a fight, that there had been a fight building up, not just because of Keisha's campaign, but the whole state and the whole party knows that there's something fundamentally different that needs to happen. That if we, it's not, that we have to make a very great change in the quality of the way that we're thinking if we're going to save the Democratic Party and save the nation. So at the convention, when it got to the time to for the state chair candidates to make their speeches, you had the so-called establishment guy who... The gossip around the convention and talking to people, you know, people kind of considered him like, well, this is who the party's chosen, and there was resistance to that because there was a recognition that we do need a change. So it came to during the election where the delegates had to vote for the candidate. None of the candidates, there were four candidates, none of the candidates got a 50% majority. So we had to have a runoff, and it was really fun. Everyone was excited during the runoff because you saw this real, the battle over the ideas that had led up to that vote that was really coming out. And so you had all the Senate districts grouping together and talking about, okay, how, you know, what's going to happen, and the people that had voted for... for Keisha and for Charlie Urbina Jones, who had played, Charlie had played a very good role in trying to include real discussion in the party, working with the other candidates and saying, we need to change things. I'm running to stir things up. So it was just a really, really amazing. Like people, you could tell that there had been a very optimistic change and that people, instead of kind of laying back and saying, oh, well, this is the way things work, they're saying, let's fight to change it. And the close election ended up with the so-called establishment guy winning, but it wasn't so much a disappointment. It was that because a change had been made in himself and the entire party, where he recognized, okay, I'm not going to take this go-along-to-get-along attitude, but I'm going to work with the other candidates and work with the Democratic Party and make this change. So it was a really amazing, if people have any questions on that.
Right. Paul and others might. Let me ask one right away. And I understand you must have intersected, even at the convention and others, some of the things that make Texas distinctive, but they've gone into the shadows. Like you have your home to a NASA installation, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, you're a big farming state and water is crucial. And then, but poor Texas has become the kind of NAFTA state of the continent because the trucks roll along with goods going north and goods going south. But you must have had individual instances, is that right, of people who want to get involved in this change you're talking about? Does anything stand out?
Well, some of the factors are more clear, where we do have one of the worst droughts in 500 years in this state. There's a pilot project for a desalination plant approved in Brownsville, which has been in the works for the past 40 years or so.
So that'll be on the Gulf there.
Right. Uh-huh. Down in South Texas in the Rio Grande Valley. Then you have in West Texas, there's recently been a teaching facility approved for production for a nuclear power plant, a high-temperature gas-cooled reactor out at the University of Texas out in West Texas in Midland, Odessa area.
Right.
So there's these, you see these developments coming out where it's a real, the question is of survival and of moving forward. What can we do? You have, Texas is not the, it's not a tropical paradise. It's kind of a difficult place to live. So you do have this recognition that we need to develop the state to make it livable. And we, there is a real, I guess, in industry, like a real industriousness of where people are willing to take on that fight.
Right. So, in fact, you, I guess if you're studying Kepler or something, you might think we got a real orbital shift going on here. Somehow you've shifted the Democratic Party nationally, along with what's happening in California or the United Auto Workers, which has been embedded in a Democratic Party that's accepted globalization.
Yeah, there's also, here in Texas, you did have, I mean, a lot of Roosevelt's programs really benefited Texas to develop the area. So you have these old FDR Democrats that are, some of them are Republicans now, but some of them are Democrats and recognize what we did do in the past and how we've gone away from that, and we've adopted this new Democrat pro-free trade persona that's destroying the party and destroying the state and destroying the nation, and that we do need to return to the principles of the Roosevelt legacy.
So I saw, by the way, I'll point out to people, your nominating speech you made for Lakeisha Rogers a week ago Saturday, that too has been transcribed. I really encourage everyone to see the next Executive Intelligence Review online or to otherwise get the print magazine.
It's also on the video, and I checked out the number of hits on that. It's something right under the order of 800, which is a lot larger than the other speakers on the web.
Oh, that's great. So, and I understand, just to one more thing about this, Natalie, you raised some of the names. I think there's Representative Henry Gonzalez. He's one we know from here in Washington. He's passed on now, but for years was the, can you imagine this? He was head of the House Banking Committee and a good, honest, thoughtful guy. But you're talking about FDR Democrats within the lifetime of some of the people you were organizing in the Democratic Party. Is that how you did it?
Yeah, some people, you have a lot of these people who were the San Antonio crowd that worked with Henry B. Gonzalez. You have people that remember the tradition of Sam Rayburn, Ralph Yarborough, and Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson actually worked during the Roosevelt administration, so he had he was a Texas Democrat that had a real living memory of Franklin Roosevelt when he was young.
Yeah, you know, Jim Wright from Texas was just here 3 days ago in Washington, the former Speaker of the House.
Oh, right.
Yeah, who was associated with and certainly with big development, you know, the commitment to water projects and so forth. So the next move is to continue all this. Is that right? And Paul and Natalie, the kind of thing you're talking about, economic lessons or pedagogy, how to teach people what real economic is instead of this new Democrat stuff?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you need these pedagogicals. A lot of people in our generation growing up in suburbia don't recognize the importance of rail or how urban centers are developed and maintained. So we have to remind them about that, because when they think of urban centers today, they think of what they see, and what they see isn't the greatest. The drugs, the crime, the collapse of cities. In the past, the urban centers were the center of culture and development of a culture. So we have quite a challenge ahead of us to develop the pedagogical ability to communicate that to people.
Well, thank you both very much. Now, we're continuing, and I'm going to make a program announcement. We have to say goodbye to Paul Marino because he's very busy in the war room here.
They're going back to war.
Yeah, and while he does that, I'll make a couple of announcements, and then we're going to continue with Natalie and with Frankie Medina more about what's happening in the on this fight in the auto sector and the United Auto Workers Convention and so forth. You know you're listening to The LaRouche Show. This is Saturday, June 16, 2006, where every week Those of you on the phone or listening otherwise in some other way know that the website is www.larouchepub.com, LAROUCHEPUB.com. And let me make a pitch for a new paper that the presses are being held for the weekly Executive Intelligence Review. That is a paper that's being finished later today by Mr. LaRouche, and it goes by this title, Ape or Man, The Secret of Economics. And that's going to be at least 20 pages or more and absolutely addressing what everyone needs to know once we free the institutions of our nation, the Democratic Party, the other institutions, from this grip of these globalizers. In other times past, you might have called them the Empire, or you might have called them the British East India Company or other things. We're not into all the history today. But Ape or Man, The Secret of Economics, Mr. LaRouche is finishing this paper, and I want people to make sure and make a point of getting that. The other thing is that the June 9th webcast of the address by Mr. LaRouche out of Washington, D.C., is going to be in a DVD. It's going to be out in upcoming days. I think the LaRouche Political Action Committee needs the resources to make that available. You need to get it. You can check their website directly, which is LaRouchePAC.com, P-A-C.com. And during the week, or even later today, call in this number at any time. It's toll-free. It's to the EIR News Service, 1-888-347-3258. That's 1-888-347-3258. I may have been rude to not say my name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I am in economics for the EIR News Service. So now we continue. June 16th, we've been joined by Tony Chaikin here in the studio, who has an article in the June 16th Executive Intelligence Review. You can check that out on the website, about a particular gaggle of nasty people. One of them is named Chip Burlett, who's been made his point over the last 20 years to slander and do dirty tricks against the effort of Lyndon LaRouche, the LaRouche youth movement. But that's not so much our topic, as when Tony was looking at this particular bad guy, he summarized how over the last 30 or 40 years you've had a number of entities, including one very famous one, the Ford Foundation, from the Ford family money, but the foundation is a thing in its own right, that have put into motion deliberate actions to foster people going along with globalization. That's one way to put it, to undermine people and to do what Natalie just called, to bring about what Natalie just called, people accepting being a new Democrat. Is that right, Natalie?
Right.
People.
Yeah.
So, Frankie, we want to get back to you, but Tony, why don't you just give us in a couple of minutes the kind of 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s quick timeline and name some names of the foundations and the kind of politics, you know, the way they were intervening to subvert our institutions, especially the Democratic Party.
All right. Well, after FDR's death, these bankers wanted to blow away the American identity, the proud farmer with his science, the proud skilled worker who was proud to be the American, bringing progress, machines, nuclear power, the space program to the world. These bankers said, if we're going to crush labor and crush this American system, we have to change the identity of the American people. And the main work to do this occurred after the murder of John Kennedy and about the same time as the murder of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Those assassinations were crucial, along with the Vietnam War, which depressed people and made people confused. In the late 1960s, the Ford Foundation was headed by one of the main architects of the Vietnam War, and that is McGeorge Bundy, from an old Boston Brahmin banker family. These are the old Anglophiles that were pro-British, the Tories. He was the national security advisor to both Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, who, after Kennedy was killed while trying to pull out of Vietnam, McGeorge Bundy push that war and a program in Vietnam called Strategic Hamlets to divide each little town in Vietnam off from the other rest of the country and split up the resistance to the invasion. When he then left the U.S. government after doing all this filthy work there, he became chairman of the Ford Foundation. The Ford Foundation, with the money taken from the Ford family in the auto industry, starting in the late 1960s, created with their billions something called identity politics. The most famous aspect was in New York City, a model for this, where they paid for different neighborhoods, black, Puerto Rican, white neighborhoods, to fight each other, to have local control of their districts in the educational fight for the budget that was being shrunk. And they would have black against white. They would have the ghetto against the Jewish teachers, against the unions. Every part of the population was put against every other part of the population around a shrinking pie. And no one was to fight for the policy of progress of the country as a whole.
No common good.
No common good. And they proceeded to manufacture new identities for people. Instead of the civil rights movement, for example, under Martin Luther King, fighting for black people who were coming up from poverty and discrimination in the South to be able to get in and join the American, the progressive American identity with a good job in the steel mill or an auto plant, the new idea was black rage against the rest of the population fed by the Ford Foundation. You had sexual politics, where somebody who might have been homosexual would be told, you are not part of the body politic. You have a separate identity of homosexual rage against the rest of the population. The same thing for many other so-called separate identities deliberately programmed by this set of oligarchs.
Yeah, I think it was called, too, the Rainbow Coalition. That is, there should be red, yellow, black, everything except a common good.
And then you had also religious politics, where some people, these bankers, set up radical right-wing religious groups, and other parts of the same banker apparatus would set up certain kinds of religious cults. They would scare Jewish people who were haunted by the Holocaust into identifying with the right, fearing anti-Semitism. So you had people split up into these groups to destroy the Franklin Roosevelt legacy. The Democratic Party went off the rails completely in this period, especially in the period of Jimmy Carter, and gave up the idea of industrial and scientific progress.
So then, and Natalie may throw something in here, or Frankie, but you're saying there was a funding conduit, and then once you fund things, it goes in the media, it goes into operation through the schools or through our institutions.
You had, at the same time as in the post-Kennedy era, Felix Rohatyn and his Lazard Frere, for example, completely took over the running of the Washington Post with Katharine Graham. Rohatyn personally, you had the Kennedy family, all their finances taken over by Felix Rohatyn and Lazard Frere. So that between these bankers setting up the right wing of the Democratic Party, the DLC, Democratic Leadership Council types.
And that was in the 70s or
80s? It was started in the late 70s, okay. But the process really began under the Jimmy Carter, this disastrous regime where you had deregulation of industry and of finance collapsing before what was done in Nixon. Instead of saying, well, what Nixon did was completely wrong, let's go back to real development in industry and nuclear power and the space program, they said, no, we're in a new era, and the Democrats are now simply this non-labor, new identity, new Democrats. So the Democratic Party, in a sense, disappeared in this identity politics.
Well, let me ask one specific while you're all on here to Frankie, who, again, was out at the Las Vegas for the National Convention of the United Auto Workers. While you were there, Frankie, one thing that has come out, I know you know, and the people you mentioned were out there know, that over the last few years, but by name, this person, Felix Rohatyn, who's like a duke of globalization or something, and this banker, and his company that he's associated with, Lazard Frères and so forth, it's been revealed that they actually designed the strategy for Delphi to both go into bankruptcy and then ask all its workers to take buyouts. Next Friday is supposed to be a deadline for workers agreeing to just leave Delphi. And Lazard was hired by name, that's Felix Rohatyn's company, to advise Ford Motors on how the workers should accept health care cuts. And his name itself or Lazard appears with a lot of other things like that. How did that go down in Las Vegas, Frankie?
Well, one thing we were doing is we would open up the booklet, the legislation or the Economic Recovery Act, to page 14, where there's a list of the automobile factories, like the Delphi, you know, energy and chassis facility. And we'd go down the line and say, hey, well, are you from any one of these plants? And they're saying, yeah, you know, we're threatened. Yeah, that's cool. Let me see this. And then we would go through why, you know, that you're having the same people that have been pushing globalization for the past 30 years, you know, around Lazard Frères and Felix Rohatyn and what he's doing now, that they are actually advising the United Auto Workers in their bankruptcy proceedings with Delphi. And so you're working with the enemy that's trying to destroy you, you know, through the names of like people like Felix Rohatyn and Lazard Frères. And so you would try to develop that in their mind, that how, you know, these guys are obviously going to shut down industry here, you know, declare bankruptcy. You know, like the method is declare bankruptcy so you can shut off all the obligations which General Motors or Delphi has with their employees. And that's what people like Steve Miller were put in for, you know, Richard Rat Wagner of General Motors, that these guys were brought in specifically by Lazard Frères, you know, and to carry out this operation to shed the industry from the United States and send it overseas. And so they would go through the literature, you know, asking, like, well, who is this Rohatyn guy? You know, people would say, yeah, I remember from New York in the 1970s and whatnot. But we would go through how, you know, he has control of the Democratic Leadership Council and how the Democratic Party just didn't, you know, become impotent just out of, you know, it's the 1980s and 1990s and it's, you know, the 21st century. We're just impotent now. No, that there was a specific intention, you know, like I said before, to cut the balls off the Democratic Party, to eliminate the Franklin Roosevelt legacy, to eliminate the science driver programs of NASA, the industry, the industrial potential of General Motors and Ford. You know, first off, to keep this stuff from spreading throughout the entire world, contain it in the United States or where it's you know, in Germany or parts of Mexico, contain it. Don't allow it to get to Africa. Don't allow it to get to South America. And so we were developing that in their mind, that there was an orchestrated attack on industrial, the industrial capability of the United States, and we are really at the end phase of it, you know, the fag end phase of the globalization, you know, and they're just going to completely eliminate, you know, the nation's ability to go back and protect the industry. You know, we're going to have this feudalist society. And, you know, a lot of them wouldn't, you know, admit that, yeah, you know, feudalism is inevitable, you know, but they would admit, like, well, globalization seems inevitable. So we'd have to tell them, well, you know, globalization is like feudalism.
Yeah, I wanted to point out that the attack on the FDR legacy was mainly an attack on Lyndon LaRouche in this recent decade's history of the Democratic Party. The way they did this is they hired certain specific slanderers like Chip Berle and Dennis King and others, and they got them out of the worst gutter elements of this decayed society. The Ford Foundation promoted the legalization of narcotics. They had sponsored things like High Times magazine of narcotics pushers. One of the two of the writers for that became the professional slanderers of Lyndon LaRouche, Chip Berle and Dennis King. And
so they're the hired hacks, like if the British East India Company.
Yes,
yeah, right.
But they're the most degraded individuals personally over the years, for imagine having a lifetime, your entire adult life, you're paid simply to do basically one thing, to abuse Lyndon LaRouche. And the Democratic Party only became this wasteland in the period when LaRouche was under this severe attack. In the 1980s, LaRouche had gone back, and particularly in the Midwest, to the forgotten industrial labor and ghetto elements in the party, and brought people back, like the what we call the Reagan Democrats, brought them back into the Democratic Party. And we were winning elections there. And it was under these circumstances that these enemy bankers were so desperate that they hired these gangster elements, the drug culture elements, to begin this slander and to work with the FBI and with the ADL and other banker agencies to put LaRouche in jail.
Well, both Frankie and Natalie, or actually it was Paul Marino of the War Room in the LaRouche Youth Movement here near Washington, D.C., have said, in a way, the line is drawn now. It's the end of the line. It's going to be one way or another. And from that point of view, Natalie, did you find, I mean, what you're implying to look ahead, that there's going to be a new, a completely new character to the Texas Democratic Party? Do you want to say more about that?
Because I just noticed that there's tremendous optimism, that coming out of the convention, people had the attitude that we can really take on these elections in November. And so already we're working out plans to work with these different candidates around the state to really mobilize a grassroots movement to get on board with this program. So, definitely there's a huge shift going on locally, nationally, everywhere.
Right. And Frankie, you've been talking about the convention in Las Vegas, but in the state of California, you're also involved in the same dynamic as she's describing for Texas, right?
Yeah, we actually, the last election, which took place, the number of us got elected to the Democratic Central Committee. I was one of them. Quincy O'Neill was one of them. Ardina Joy Clark was another. And we had Carlos Ramirez. And then up north, we had Jonathan Stewart from our Oakland office become a part of the Alameda County Democratic Central Committee. We were there in the last election. We had some people there. And, you know, next Sunday, we're having one of our members, Creighton Cody Jones. He was nominated to be the Democrat of the Year for the 44th Assembly District here in Los Angeles, which is the Assembly District that we send the representatives to Sacramento. You know, so we are shaping the fight, or shaping the Democratic Party. You know, grabbing this potential which is out on the streets, that's tired of politics, tired of what's been going on, tired of not seeing anybody do anything. You know, but we're going door to door to these houses, going in their communities, as we've been with the youth movement on the college campuses, as many of the listeners already know. You know, the principle is working. You know, that people, given a solution, given history back to them, will begin to fight. You know, they're human beings. They don't want to live in a society that has no future. They don't want to go down the drain, where Dick Cheney is trying to send them. You're seeing the Democratic Party, this legacy, still within the forgotten men and women. It just, the potential needs to be tickled a little bit out of these people.
Right. Well, I want to throw one thing in here, because Paula from Nebraska, I just want to acknowledge and thank her for an email, because, Frankie, you mentioned Cheney and what we're up against with this. And she's saying, she's monitoring how much there's readiness for talking impeachment out in Nebraska, because certainly Dick Cheney, with everything that we know about him, and in particular what's been brought out of as what they politely call his state of mind, as the prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald calls it, when it comes to what he perpetrated in the case of lying about Iraq buying uranium from Africa and then outing Valerie Plame. But so on the Dick Cheney question, you probably at a national convention of auto workers, or probably in the course of Texas, Natalie, you were finding that people, could they focus on this? Could they distinguish? I mean, you're right there in the bushes that you're leading the world out of. What was it like on the matter of really mobilizing the people have to face the threat that Cheney represents?
In Las Vegas and Los Angeles, I mean, people, like in Las Vegas, they were well aware, you know, got to remove Dick Cheney, got to remove Bush. You know, and a lot more people are moving towards saying Dick Cheney first, and it's not just impeach Bush as it was for the, you know, the first 4 years of the administration. In California, I mean, you have a definite anti-administration posturing. You're giving it to the bluest of the blue states. But it's just not sharp enough. As we've seen, our congressional delegation or Senate delegation really hasn't shown the type of leadership that should have taken place, 2 years into the Bush administration, a year into the Bush administration. You know, you're having Maxine Waters coming out with this Cheney, get Cheney first, and which was mentioned at the Texas Democratic State Convention that Natalie was at. I think Keisha had mentioned it. But yeah, I mean, you're seeing more and more people are coming over, you know, Republicans alike. So that's pretty much what I've been getting.
Natalie, you're there?
Yeah. I think here there's more of a recognition in the party, maybe than in a place where it is known that it's a blue state. But here, because the Democrats have been losing for so many years, people, I think we've finally made that shift where there's a recognition that we need to take this more seriously, and that these guys understand how bad Cheney is and how what this administration is doing, and so they're willing. They've been mobilized not by how bad they are, but that we need to be that much better, and that we need to come out and really fight on principle and really represent the good, like to take what is lacking and to be that much better in terms of representing the good to lead, because Texas can play a very large role in the national elections. And so I think people realize that we have a pretty big opportunity and a responsibility now to lead the people that may be somewhat miseducated on what this administration is doing.
Right. Now, one thing is that both of you in California and Texas, but the whole LaRouche Youth Movement has been very constantly involved in an age group, but also literally on campuses, colleges and other things. And Tony may say a minute or two on part of, Tony, this apparatus that interconnects with Felix Rohatyn and the Globalizers and Ford Foundation for domestic pacification or something. They did try and they have been up to dirty tricks on campuses. Is that right?
Well, the Ford Foundation paid over $300,000 to Chip Berlay's company in Massachusetts, his outfit, to go on campuses to counter Lyndon LaRouche. And they stated that...
And this was in the last couple
years? It was in 2002 and 2004.
When the LaRouche Youth Movement was really into its own.
That's right. The cover was that they were supposed to write a report about the outreach of unnamed national organizations onto the campus and what was the result in politics on campus. And, of course, we were the only force doing that on the campus. Everything else was dead. So they spread Chip Berlay's writings. You know, I guess they didn't spread his original writing from High Times magazine in 1981, where he said, "Lyndon LaRouche wants to take your drugs away."
Everyone should know there's a photograph of what Tony's saying. You don't have to believe Tony. There's documentation in the next Executive Intelligence
Review.
Yeah,
we have a photograph of that article from High Times.
But 1981.
At this point, I believe that we're on the campuses and in factories and elsewhere, we're at the same point as we were in the around 1930-31, when these cult religious groups of the 1920s were just going away because people saw their lives were falling apart in the Depression, and they said, "Wait a minute, I must have been praying to the wrong God. or something. And they didn't. Some of them actually became Christians after that and gave up this fanaticism. But they said, I've got to protect my family. We have to organize politics to do that. So we'll see that in the campuses and in the factories now as we go out to organize. A new day.
Right. Well, on the campus factor, I don't mean college students per se, but what about the recruitment? I just wanted to put this again to Natalie in Texas. Are there any special plans, or it's a way of life?
Well, we're going to be continuing the work on the campuses and trying to pull these students into the fight. We've been the past few days since we've gotten back from the convention. We have been on the campuses, hitting even the smaller summer school crowds, and saying, "Look, you guys should come with us to campaign. Come with us to these meetings. Help us get signatures and support for this emergency legislation. Get on board now." So, yeah, there's definitely a strong recruitment drive down here.
And is there a feeling of this being a make or break time in history? But it's an election year. Does that factor into anything?
Yeah, definitely. We've had a lot of success. Like when we were campaigning against Tom DeLay in the 2004 election, we brought a lot of students into the process with us, where they felt like they had a real mission, and so they would go door to door with us, go to different events, and we're attempting to generate that same process now, but in a different point of history. And so we'll be bringing students and bringing young people, bringing whoever wants to come out and campaign with us and make sure we have a landslide victory.
Right. And you and California in particular has got statewide elections. You have the governorship, right?
Yeah, we have the Democratic primary. We had this porcelain man, Steve Wesley, who helped found eBay and put in like $32 million into the campaign that was a losing effort to Phil Angelides, which he's going to now contend with Schwarzenegger in November, which right now is the population is just kind of fed up with the politics. And no one's, you know, obviously truthful. You're getting a bunch of trash sent to you in your mail. And so, like, politics in the mind of most people is very different than what we're doing with the youth movement, bringing people into meetings, challenging them on, you know, what they can't see, you know, the future, the past, challenging on them on what they can actually know, and how we're at a point in history where the only way we're going to get out of it is if we act on what we know, what we know can, you know, really bring us out, you know, which is, you know, the machine reindustrializing the United States, you know, bringing leadership back to the sense of the general welfare principle, which we've seen in leadership like Franklin Roosevelt. Right now, I think we got like two or three people which are thinking about joining here in Los Angeles. You know, we have a lot of people that are come around. You know, do their own thing, and you know, but stay in tune with what we're doing. Get literature out. You know, there's like a number of people we have in Las Vegas, which was interesting. An older contact, Conrado, he was out there organizing with us, and we got some young people that come around. But you know, the contacts we're making at the Los Angeles County Democratic Central Committee, you know, these people are making more of a note in what we're doing. We got the Franklin Roosevelt Legacy Club, which we're going to be having a meeting soon here. You know, we're bringing in congressional candidates. There's one woman, Jill Martinez, from the 24th California Congressional District. She's going to come out and speak. We have, since the election sorted out who are the Democratic contenders for the state assembly and state senate, we're bringing these guys in to come speak, as well as different organizations like General Atomics and maybe the Trans Rapid USA group. That some people have been in contact with, bringing them in so we can have a policy discussion on where we need to take the United States, where we need to take the Democratic Party. And so we really are the catalyst for all this within the Democratic Party and, you know, the country and the world. So that's really our role.
Another quick word, Marcia, on
Please.
The youth recruitment is that when we were campaigning for Keisha's campaign for state chair, we traveled all over the state, and we went to a lot of new campuses and places where we had never been to. And there was a tremendous response from some of the young people out there who were very excited about what we were doing. So we're planning on going back to some of the places that we went to pull some of those young people into our activities as well.
Well, thank you very much. And we're getting now down to the past few seconds. And I want everyone to know that on June 24th, next Saturday, that's June 24th, 2006, from 3 to 4 p.m. in the afternoon, when our regular LaRouche show is weekly, we're going to have Michelle Steinberg, who's our counterintelligence expert for the Executive Intelligence Review, and you know her as host on the show. She's going to interview Hussein Askari, who's an Iraqi who is based in Europe, and on the whole strategic situation, the two of them will go over the danger that the world faces and how urgent it is for us to accomplish the kinds of things that our guests today are talking about. I thank Doris from Wenatchee, Washington, excuse me, who sent an email about the people behind the 9/11 incident. We'll save that for next week. But I do want you to listen. I want to thank everyone today, Natalie Lofgren from Houston, Texas, Frankie Medina from California, and Tony Chaikin here in the studio of the Executive Intelligence Review News Service. So we're closing off the LaRouche Show for June 16th, 2006. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you so much. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye. ¶¶